Stampede Blue. What we talking about? Indianapolis, AFC South. Stampede Blue, let's air it out. Fly route, let's air it out. Topics, loaded like offense. Colt-centric, talk about it often. Stampede Blue, let's air it out. Fly route, let's air it out. Do it big, like lines for an offense.
Welcome back to another Stampede Blue Colts cast, ladies and gentlemen. I'm your host, Matt Dainley. Thank you guys for coming back for another show. Tonight, we've got Kevin Bowen from 1070 The Fan joining us. Kevin, what's going on?
Not too much, Matt. How are you?
I'm doing great. Glad to have you on the show. It's been a little while since we've had kind of a podcast conversation, but there's a lot to talk about. And I talk about this stuff on my own, but it's always good to bounce different stuff off other people's ears. I love our conversations, whether we're at camp or doing stuff like this. So I'm excited for this. This is going to be a little bit of fun for us.
Yeah, definitely. I've enjoyed our conversations up at Grand Park. And I remember when we talked all season long, I think both of us were anxious to get to this time of the year where we'd start to get some answers to all the questions. And there are obviously still some questions left, but we are starting to get at least a couple answers out of the way as we reach the midway point of August.
Right. It's kind of, I mean, and like you said, it is nice to actually have these questions to talk about as opposed to, you know, who's going to play where. Just the most random off the wall, nothing you can substantiate questions in the off season. Those are always the worst and hardest to actually enjoy talking about. And now we're actually talking about football, starters, you know, sadly enough, injuries, but that's all part of the process. That's part of actually being in the season. So,
definitely.
Kevin, have you watched the first two episodes of Hard Knocks?
I actually haven't. No, I haven't. I've caught just kind of bits and pieces of, you know, highlights on YouTube or whatnot. But no, I don't subscribe to HBO, and unfortunately haven't been able to watch it yet. So Sounds like I'm missing a pretty good series.
Yeah, it's not too bad actually so far. Kind of strange, but you did catch the Jarvis Landry speech to the wide receiver room.
I did.
What did you think about that? I'm just curious. What did you think about that?
You know, I thought it was some leadership that I don't think that I really knew much about Jarvis Landry.
Yeah, me too.
You know, I think he kind of got maybe a little bit of a bad rep, you know, being down there in Miami, you know, people thinking, oh, all he does is just kind of catch, you know, whatever, catch 100 balls plus, and he's this guy that just kind of puts up stats, and that's purely it. It was nice to see kind of a different side. Of a guy that I don't really had a great grasp on who he was, just outside of being a possession wideout. And, you know, good for Cleveland. I mean, Cleveland, you know, I think John Dorsey has come in there and made it a clear, you know, kind of a clear change in culture outside of, you know, removing Hugh Jackson. I mean, he was very active, I thought, in the offseason, totally revamping that roster and just bringing in guys that are so just outside of the Cleveland realm of, okay, this is the stereotype in the Browns, and we're never going to break that stereotype. I thought that was key. You know, I thought I kind of, with my job, I kind of compare things to the NBA frequently, and I thought, you know, going back to what the Raptors did in trading for Kawhi Leonard, yes, Kawhi has these, you know, off the court, you know, issues, I guess, but at the same time, Kawhi Leonard's won a championship. Like, Danny Green has won a championship, and you go into Toronto where you've been the laughingstock of the postseason for the past couple of years, you know, being swept and seemingly, you know, underachieving every year. I think that's what teams have got to do. It's when you have this stain and this kind of just sour taste and negative sort of culture, you got to do things pretty drastic to change it up, and I credit John Dorsey for doing that.
Yeah, and I agree with you. That was something I didn't know about Jarvis Landry, nor did I not only know it, but I didn't expect it from him. And then you kind of see, you know, that this team is basically just a mess, it seems like, the organization in general. And then he stands up and kind of addresses the wide receiver room. I was like, man, that might be the lone shining light, it seems like, in that organization, you know, because it just seems like such a mess. But I was pleasantly surprised with what he did. I thought that was pretty cool. Kind of like a spinoff on that, with such a young roster right now for the Colts, we've gone from literally one of the oldest in the league to one of the youngest, almost, it seems like, in a snap. Who have you seen? Because I don't know that I could give more than maybe one guy's name, But who have you seen on this Colts roster that is kind of that vocal leader for the group?
It's tough, Matt. And I know, that's the question that we had, you know, throughout the offseason. I would say Matt Slauson is probably a guy that I think has taken on some of that. And at least he's probably more lead by example, which I think the Colts have several of those guys. And but if you're talking purely vocal, I mean, it's tough. You know, I think at times we undervalue the leadership of Andrew Luck. And I thought at Tuesday's night practice, when they went kind of no huddle and up tempo, the leadership of Luck and just his intelligence in general just shined so brightly. And just kind of how he was just literally getting to that line of scrimmage, kind of muddle huddling things together. And he just had the defense on its heels. And it seems like that just kind of reverberates throughout the whole offense of, look, I will get us into the right plays. I will get us into the right formations and personnel groupings. And you just trust me and follow my lead. And you just forgot that part of Luck.
Right.
So I don't think, just because he's not, you know, I don't think Andrew Luck would be giving a Jarvis Landry type of rant. But I think we sometimes underestimate what he is like behind a closed door.
Mm-hmm.
He might not be the most hard knockish screamer and yeller. It might be a little bit awkward and it might be a little bit goofy at times, but you know, when you can go do it on the field, like he's done it on the field before, guys are naturally going to follow that lead. So I think Luck and Slauson on offense would be the two choices I would go with. On the defensive side of the ball, I got no answer for you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you were walking out captains tomorrow against the Bengals, I would assume Jabal Sheard would be one of them, just purely off of he's probably your best returning defensive player last year who played more than 10 games.
Mm-hmm.
So I think he would be out there, but I don't think Sheard, I don't think Al Woods are the most vocal guys. You know, nobody in that linebacker group has kind of earned the right to be a leader. I guess Najee Good at least has experience.
Mm-hmm.
But he's only started 4 games in his NFL career. And then in the secondary, you know, I think Mathias Farley is your closest thing to a leader. But again, you know, he's a guy that's barely been in the NFL. And, you know, now that Malik Hooker and Clayton Gathers are healthy, you know, Farley's probably not going to start. So, it's just tough for me to pinpoint many leaders on this team.
Yeah, and I kind of had the same problem. And Slauson had come across my mind only because we've seen that he's kind of anchored this. You know, you take on Quentin Nelson, you've got Ryan Kelly. He's kind of anchored and kind of, you know, at least especially early in practices from training camp, you kind of saw him being the enforcer almost of the three. I mean, you were still getting Nelson killing people. You were still getting, you know, the tough play out of Ryan Kelly. But you were seeing Slauson doing stuff through and after the whistle almost, you know, kind of trying to really set that tone. But vocally, that's maybe a different story with him because I don't know that I've really I know that he's taken some of the other linemen under his wing, so to speak, and kind of tried to get that going. But I don't know that we've heard it so much on the field. Obviously, Luck with the offense. And then the defense, you know, I kind of had the same thought, and I thought, you know, would it be John Simon kind of also? And is that maybe – you know, why his lead by example as well, also with Sheard and some of those other guys. You know, I just kind of wondered, and I guess Farley last year had that that connotation about him that he was a leader because of him basically taking snaps from TJ Green right off in, like, OTAs, I think it was last year. And that kind of leads you to that. But, man, it is the defense is really hard. I wonder if Autry's that vocal guy. But I can't say that I've really noticed it. You know what I mean? From really too many guys at all.
I don't think Autry's very vocal. I mean, Farley is a guy I know the staff loves, and you know that was I'm pretty sure that was a Ryan Grigson post preseason cut claim off the Cardinals, and then Chris Ballard, you know, no ties to Farley whatsoever, but immediately kind of just loved the guy and. With Slauson, you know, I think Googe, the new O-line coach, has touched on this before. You know, when the Colts were going to make free agent moves on the O-line and it looked like, you know, they were quickly kind of washed out of the sweepstakes for a Norwell or a Pugh or whoever else they kind of labeled as a possible target, they wanted to get a swagger, a mentality, a presence, if you will, that was different than the rest of that room. And you won't hear Chris Ballard, I think, say anything, you know, like Anthony Costanzo, and when Jack Muir was on the team and Ryan Kelly, I think they all are very hard workers.
Mm-hmm.
I think they're all great pros. But I think Slauson takes things to another level in just the mean streak that he flips when he gets on the field. And when you watch him, to me, you almost think Richie Incognito. You know, he kind of got the horse collar and wears that number in the 60s. And look, is he an all-pro? No.
Mm-hmm.
Not at all. You know, he's a nice starting guard in the NFL, but he just, I think, brings a different sort of presence and that nasty streak that room desperately needed. So I think that's what was really key for the Colts to bring in, is you've got to change the mentality mm-hmm. of that offensive line room. And it's fine to have a Costanzo. It's fine to have a Kelly. And I don't think that those guys can be and should be, you know, very important players for the Colts. But the Nelsons and the Slauson's, those guys can rub off on the rest of the line. Then you really have the sort of style of play in the trenches that's been lacking over the past, you know, 6 or 7 years.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So let's move on kind of to another spot of the offense here. Can the Colts afford, do you think, to keep four tight ends? And if so, who's the bottom guy or two you got on there?
I'm definitely going to cut Mo Alie-Cox. I really don't think Cox has been like that poorly
right.
during camp. I just think it's such a deep position group, and you know he's still got some practice squad eligibility. Maybe you can sneak him through. But it comes down to five for me, and obviously Jack Doyle and Eric Ebron are going to be on the team, and I would cut Darrell Daniels. Although I think the staff is a little bit higher on him than I am.
Mm-hmm.
I get it. He fits a nice blocking role, and that's probably needed. But I just look at Ross Travis and Eric Swope, and I just think those ceilings are so much higher than Daniels. And if you really feel like you need an extra blocking tight end, Daniels is going to be on this team. And we've seen Daniels play a fullback role in camp when they have gone short yardage. And, you know, maybe early on in the season, is that needed with Robert Turbin, you know, out for four games? I don't know. I just don't think he has that niche of a role that you would eliminate Swope or Travis, because if you cut Swope or Travis, those guys are getting claimed
mm-hmm.
immediately.
Yeah.
I am very high on Ross Travis.
Me too.
I've always kind of said I never thought Swope was the most natural catcher of the football. But, man, he's made some pretty impressive grabs this camp. And, you know, I think Travis is just such a, he's got that perfect basketball power forward mold. He's probably a little bit slender than Swope, but man, he just kind of glides out there
mm-hmm.
on the field. And, I would keep Doyle, Ebron, Swope and Travis, and probably wouldn't think twice about it. I think it's a very deep position group. I see no reason to keep a six wide out. And I really don't see any reason to keep – I think you can keep four running backs and four tight ends and still have enough to get by, you know, 53-man roster-wise. But, you know, if Hines is going to be your punt returner and kick returner, or Chester Rogers maybe can help you out there, there's no need, in my mind, to keep a six wide out.
Yeah, I agree. And thinking about that extra blocking tight end, do you think simply that the – I mean, may the struggles with the tackle position, you think, on either side – maybe have at least struggle to like kind of nail down a starter, I guess, in a hardcore backup for Costanzo. To would that play maybe a part in them keeping a Daniels over Ross, you know, I mean, or a Travis? I mean, or do they just simply think, look, these guys can block good enough to help with chip blocks for these tight ends?
I would hope not, to be honest with you. You know, I totally get where you're coming from, and I think it's a topic that Frank Reich and Chris Bowd and that staff will have here as we get into the later days of August. But with this quicker rhythm to the passing game, and if Anthony Costanzo does get back and is, you know, healthy for week one, which I think all expectations are that he will be, you know, really where the help is going to be needed is at right tackle. Mm-hmm. You know, that's where you're going to have to shift, and that's where you're going to have to kind of throw a back over there. And I just don't think the Colts have enough skill players to have extra guys be committed to the pass blocking sort of protection scheme. And I get it. The first priority is protect, but you just don't have enough individual talent, I think, to win out at wide out or even at tight end a little bit as well, to where all of a sudden you can max protect and think that you're going to get guys open.
Mm-hmm.
I just think that's kind of a pipe dream with specifically, I should say, probably the playmakers at receiver, I don't think are skilled enough. Tight ends, you know, obviously you can find some matchup issues with Ebron and whatnot. So I just think the ceiling is too high on Swope, too high on Travis to give up on them. And I know it's tough, and I know you might lose a little bit from a blocking standpoint, but, you know, throw in an extra tackle in the game, and if you're really going to run the ball, really commit to running it. I think you can get by with this scheme and, you know, getting things quicker rhythm where, you know, if Andrew Luck does need to take a 7-step drop, you know, once or twice a series, that's when you can have, you know, a tight end, maybe Chip or, you know, Marlon Mack or Jordan Wilkins, whoever, slide over there and help out that right side.
Yeah, good points. Good points, because I had, you know, it was something that we've talked about a little bit in the past. But I mean, that makes sense. You don't want to funnel all of your talent off simply to have an additional blocker. I mean, that makes sense. But it just kind of makes you wonder what their thought process is going to be with that. But talking about the tackles here, do you think that Joe Haig, first of all, I mean, real quick, do you think Joe Haig did bad enough in his first preseason game there at left tackle to warrant basically being, like, hidden on the depth chart over there now?
Yeah, I didn't think so. Obviously, you know, Green got the best of them on that, what was it, the second series of the game.
But Green's going to be really good. When,
yeah, I mean, this is a guy that, you know, could have been probably, what was he, third round, I think he was. I mean, he easily could have been into the second round. You know, to me, it's like, all right, if I'm Frank Reich, and the night before I'm scripting the game plan, I'm sitting down with Andrew Luck, and, you know, I say to him, okay, we're going to take one shot deep, because obviously that play was meant to go deep.
Right.
I make sure that I have a back at least helping Joe Haig.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Joe Haig had barely practiced at left tackle during camp, really. I mean, he had just done it kind of the previous two or three days, and those weren't the most physical practices leading into Seattle.
Mm-hmm.
So I kind of feel bad for Joe Haig. And, you know, yes, he's a nice guy. I'm sure that's where some of it comes from. But also, like, he's not gotten a great chance to compete for a starting job here.
Right.
Like, and you're giving starting chances to Jamarcus Webb and Braden Smith. And, you know, and it's like, well, Joe Haig, you know, has been a starter in this league before. He's still young. You've never given him the chance to settle in at a position. Then you've thrown center on his plate this offseason. It's just been tough, I think, on Joe Haig to really make a strong impression.
Mm-hmm.
So I was surprised when I got back from Seattle and it's been LaRaven Clark
right
at left tackle. You know, to me, I had probably already kind of written Clark off and not making this team. If you would have told me, if you had told me a week and a half ago that at one point during camp, the Colts for three straight days are going to have Braden Smith starting at tackle and LaRaven Clark starting at tackle, I would have told you to, you're a freaking idiot. Like, it's amazing to me. Now, obviously, the Costanzo injury
right
is the reason why Clark is starting, but even Smith at right tackle, you know, during the whole offseason, when he was drafted, I look at him and I say 6'6", 315. All right, they're at least going to give him a shot at tackle because you had invested so much in the guard position. At that point, you know, you obviously thought Muhort was at least going to factor into a depth spot, and then you had Flaws in and you drafted Nelson the night before. And, you know, I quickly got the word from the Colts that, no, he's going to be a guard.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, all right, you know, I'll take your word for it. And then we go out there and we watch everything in OTAs and minicamp, and all Braden Smith did was play second team right guard. And then all of a sudden now injuries and Austin Howard's just, you know, kind of collapse really on the depth chart has led to Smith getting some reps. So, I mean, right now, I think I said it, I don't know if you were out there, At practice the other day, I said, all right, five guys right now could start at right tackle. And it's Austin Howard, it's Joe Haig, it's Jamarcus Webb, it's Denzel Good, and Braden Smith. And if you were going to kind of make a little pie chart out of that, I wouldn't give anybody more than about 35% of that pie. I mean, I may be good if he gets healthy, but it's tough to call anyone a favorite over there. I'm anxious to see Braden Smith in game reps, or at least against the Ravens here in a, you know, joint practice setting. But it's just hard to say that anyone else is a favorite. I would probably go with Good if he's healthy. But I feel like Frank Reich's a little frustrated with how much time Denzel Good has missed.
Yeah, I think that I would be too. I mean, what was his, a hamstring?
Hamstring, and remember, he failed the physical the first day, and then Austin Howard, you know, failed the physical, and that lasted 3 or 4 days. So Austin Howard didn't do himself any favors at the start of camp. Mm-hmm. And then I was actually, before we got on the call, I was going back, I hadn't watched the full replay yet. I'd only watched the first quarter a couple times over of the Seattle game. And man, when Webb gets beat for that sack, I think it was Mingo maybe got the sack.
He killed him.
On Jacoby Brissett. Howard got whipped as well on the other side. It was kind of like who was going to get there first.
Right.
So when, you know, at the end of the offseason program with Jim Irsay saying, you know, we hope that, you know, Denzel Good kind of wins the right tackle job, and it looked like it was a Howard versus Good competition. Well, then both of them failed the physical and aren't ready to go day one. And that didn't, I don't think, that definitely didn't send a great message, I think, to Frank Reich. So I think Denzel Good, if I remember correctly, he got hurt one of those indoor practices early in camp, like maybe probably about two Wednesdays ago or two Tuesdays ago. And he's been out ever since with that hamstring. I asked Frank Reich yesterday and Tuesday, and it sounded like he would be back soon. I actually saw him jogging over to a family to sign a football after practice on Tuesday. So it does look like he's getting there. But then Reich kind of added, and we really need him healthy, or it's, you know, something to that effect, that he could tell the head coach wasn't too pleased that Denzel Good was still out.
Yeah, I think that right tackle spot is desperately missing him as far as for the competition itself. I mean, because then you at least have an idea of who you want there. Maybe not, you know,
right.
you hope Good once it can be healthy, but you at least have an idea of who you really want in that spot, I think, a better idea at least. And, like, well, I mean, the move from Braden Smith from guard to tackle, I was excited that they tried it in camp, but I didn't see great responses out of him the first, what, two or three practices that they were putting him in there. And I think it was initially on second and third team snaps, and now they're working in first team. So they must see he's either learning really quickly, or they're just seeing something in his skill set that tells them that he can be athletic enough to hold it down, or at least be in the competition for it. And maybe they're just, I don't know. It's hard to see, because there's so many injuries that you can't assume that they're just doing it for backup purposes. They're giving those guys first team reps for a reason right now. And it is because of injuries, and because of, like you said, the dissension of Austin Howard. You know, what about LaRaven Clark though at left tackle? Tell me how he's looked the past few days in camp.
Hey, I actually think he's held his own out there. I haven't noticed too much off the edge. And to, you know, to be fair, that starting D line right now has really been Marcus Hunt at one of the end spots. So you aren't getting a great natural pass rush opposite Jabal Sheard. So I think Clark has actually kind of held his own. Now, I need to see Raven live snaps. I need to see game snaps, because LaRaven Clark, I'm not sitting here saying he should be on the 53-man roster, to be honest with you. Mm-hmm. But I agree with what the Colts are doing at left tackle. Like, you need to have emergency situation in your back pocket, because if LaRaven Clark can show he can play left tackle, he's going to be on this team.
Right.
Like, you need that emergency situation, and you can't let that guy walk out of your door. Mm-hmm. With Braden Smith at the right tackle, I'm kind of with you. You know, I remember early on in camp when I asked Reich, you know, okay, is this more of you guys love Matt Slauson at right guard, or do you need to see more out of Braden Smith? Because that's not a competition.
Right.
Like, that is over. And, you know, he kind of said, we need to see more out of Braden Smith. And those early right tackle reps for him, second team, third team, were not pretty. But I feel like the edge has been better these past couple of days. Now, again, you don't have those natural pass rushers in there, but I think it's less to do with Smith has made this quantum leap and more so to do with, look, everybody else either sucks or is hurt. Like, right. We need to try some people. And kudos for them for trying out the rookie because, you know, in my thinking of this 2018 season, and I know this is hard because the NFL, anything can happen in a given year, one eye has got to be looking forward to 2019 and beyond. Like, when you look at this rookie class and you know how that's why I think the Deion Kane injury is so significant because you're stunting growth of a guy that could have blossomed and could still blossom into being a key skilled player for you for years to come. Mm-hmm. Well, you didn't draft Braden Smith to ride the bench. You drafted a guard in the top 40 picks.
Right.
That means he starts, and it probably means he starts day one. Mm-hmm. So that I'm the Colts fans, I think, should be pleased to see the staff giving such a serious look at Braden Smith. And that's why I think over these next three practices, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, he needs to be out there again and try him Monday night as well and just see what you have there.
Right. He's going to get a hell of a
–
he's going to get a big test too because the Ravens looked good off the edge the other night.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of a young kid that they have. He's kind of got a funky last name, but he had a the kid opposite Suggs.
Number 56.
Yeah, he was – yeah.
I can't remember his name either.
I can look it up, but I don't care that much.
Right.
You know – Baltimore at least gives you some edge rushers that, and this is just a general thing you like about joint practices. You are going up against guys that you don't know their tendencies of day in and day out. Like, you know Jabal Sheard's counter move by now, or at least you better know it.
Mm-hmm.
You know what John Simon's bringing at you. So I just don't have a great answer. It's the most wide open position battle left on the offense. I think you could name 10 starters pretty comfortably on the offense, if Marlon Mack and Costanzo are healthy. But right tackle is clearly the most wide open position left on the team, left on the offense. And there's just not a lot of great answers, which is kind of scary to say, you know, 2.5 weeks or 3.5 weeks out of the preseason or regular season open.
Yeah, I agree. And getting back a little bit into the Hague for just a second here, I kind of felt bad for him, too. I felt like he deserved a little bit more of an opportunity there because it's not that they're keeping him away from snaps. It's that you're taking him away from starting snaps, and I think that you need to give him those there because you can't just give a guy a few snaps here, a few snaps there, and expect to really get a lot out of that. I think that they really need to give him a little bit more of an opportunity to kind of really show what he can do there because he is going to be a utility guy for the Colts. Give him another shot again. I mean, trade him out every, you know, him and LaRaven Clark every series, you know, Monday night. Do something like that so you're getting a good mix of starters and second and third team guys to see really which of those two holds up against really similar competition in the game. Don't put one in for the first quarter and a half and then put the other one in after that because you don't really learn anything off of that, in my opinion. You know,
no.
So I'm
evaluate these guys against their top flight guys coming off the edge. I think that's key. And, you know, to just show you how far Austin Howard's dropped in the depth chart, Ryan Kelly got hurt. It might have been Sunday. He had some cramps. And so he goes out. They move Slauson from right guard to center. They move Braden Smith from right tackle to right guard. And I'm expecting Austin Howard to go in the game or to go in for the final 11-on-11 session. He doesn't go in. Joe Hague goes in. So, no Denzel Good. Braden Smith's moved into right guard. And Joe Hague is above you. I mean, Austin Howard, are you the fourth right tackle on this team right now? I mean, you started 16 games for the Ravens last year. So, that to me is just mind-boggling. And, you know, Sheard pancaked the hell out of him in a one-on-one rep the other day. It's just... I mean, it's not been a great free agent signing right now in Austin Howard, and we'll see. You know, if they're just looking at Hague and Braden Smith as, you know, position flex guys, and they're kind of be your sixth and seventh offensive linemen, and, you know, Denzel Good will start, and maybe you round out the group with, you know, Vujinovic and Bond or I'm sure I'm forgetting somebody. But yeah, maybe Jamarcus Webb. I mean, who knows? But yeah, it would be nice for the sake of Joe Haig if he did get a little more consistent run with that starting unit.
Yeah, I mean, and you know, it was I think Howard was right in the middle of the league last year at right tackle. And I thought that was kind of a, you know, everybody, I think, thought that that was a good sign that this Colts offensive line is really going to be rounded out with potential starters there. So that's, you know, he has really taken a deep fall from grace. So that's not been fun to watch at all. But folks, stay with us we're going to take a quick break, and we'll be back with more with Kevin Bowen. All right, guys, welcome back to the Colts Cast. Kevin, let's talk about this defense now a little bit. You put something on Twitter the other night, unnamed member of the media, and the gist of it, you know, paraphrasing, was that this defense has a lot of work to do just to be bad. First and foremost, do you agree with that?
The quote sounds awful. Yeah, I mean,
right. But I mean,
Tuesday night was not a good night for this defense. I don't completely agree with it, but what I've seen in camp and what I saw, and all we can go off is what we've seen so far, and that's 15 practices at Grand Park, which, you know, I've been there for every one, and you know, we all have watched the, what, 2 to 3 series. Like probably 2 series is more what you can evaluate. I think Seattle pretty much took out everybody after those 2 series. It hasn't looked good.
Right.
And nothing makes me think they're going to be a top 25 defense in the league. Maybe Malik Hooker and Clayton Gethers can cure a lot. But the front 7 is a concern. I think Darius Leonard is going to be a really good player. I think Najee Good has actually flashed a little bit and has shown a guy that I think can be a starter. But that front 4, I just don't know how much playmaking that you're going to get. And when you hear Matt Eberflus talk and say, I want to rush 4 and drop 7, well, that sounds great when the front 4 has Miller and Ware as your ends, or Mathis and Freeney as your ends. Or and you don't even have, you know, right now it's Marcus Hunt and Jabal Sheard, or it's John Simon and Jabal Sheard. It's nobody in the front. Does an opposing offensive coordinator worry about on a Tuesday night and say, how are we going to block him? What help? You know, we just talked about it in the first segment. The Colts, you know, they have to decide, how are you going to help that right tackle? Well, if you don't have an opposing edge player that, or interior player that makes you think twice about that, then it's going to be pretty easy for an offense to game plan against you.
Right.
And I just think from what I've seen, it's a lot of bend and don't break. And I mean, I thought they bent back about as much as they could in those first 2 series against Seattle. And, you know, if Austin Davis doesn't make a poor decision, you know, it's probably 14-0.
Right.
And I just think with the front, and you hear it's going to be a simpler scheme and it's going to be easier to learn, and we're just going to out-execute, well, if it's going to be simple and it's not going to be the most, you know, crazy, exotic-looking thing for an offense to see, you better have some pretty good players.
Right.
To make sure that what you're doing, you can just almost out-athlete the other side of the ball. And I just don't see that out of the front. And, you know, maybe once these rookies get healthy and Ture and Lewis, you know, maybe they can show you something, but I just haven't seen enough, again, in these first 15 practices and in that small sample size in the preseason opener, that makes me think this is going to be a defense that is going to be, you know, close to the middle of the pack. Right now, I'd put it firmly in the probably mid to late 20s. And I know it's probably not what fans want to hear, but that's kind of what I have observed so far at training camp.
And I think the onus really is on Eberflus here to be unique and creative with his calls. And how is he going to game plan this defense? The one thing that I really liked about the defense, especially in the first couple drives. Now, I know there was, you know, a touchdown drive. I know it was a long drive. but I really loved the energy from that group, because I don't know that we've seen that kind of energy in I wouldn't say necessarily all outright speed, but the combination of the two. We haven't seen that in an Indianapolis defense for at least I haven't for quite a while. And I think that, like you said, when those rookies get healthy, you see, you know, a little bit what you can get out of them, whether, you know, Turay can actually end up being an imposing force off of the edge, whether Sheard can double. Basically, in this scheme, Sheard should be able to double his sack numbers from a year ago if he's the guy that they think he is. You know what I mean? So,
yeah.
It makes you wonder where that comes for the rest of the defense. Does the is the linebacking core solid enough as such a youthful group? And if not, what about the cornerbacks? And then even if then, are Gethers and Hooker good enough to offset some of the mistakes that are going to happen in front of them? This is I do like the energy level, like I said, and I do like a lot of things that I see and potential and everything else. But I think that we are a bit of the head of the skis if we're thinking that this team's going to be a top half of the league or even in that 15 to 20 range. Right now, there's so much more that we have to see from this group. And I totally agree with you there. But, man, I do like the potential, and I love seeing where it's headed.
Yeah, I will agree with you. I thought that you guys were under the football and just general speed, I did think looked faster. And clearly there's an emphasis there to get, you know, 11 guys are under the ball. And, you know, we see that every day at Grand Park, and I get it. A training camp is meant for an offense to have a little bit of an upper hand.
Right.
That's just kind of how practices roll, and honestly, that's probably how today's NFL rolls from a rule standpoint and stuff like that. And I just look at the defense, and those first two series, you had a couple chances to get off the field. You had a 3rd and 16. Then I think in the second series, you kind of got mixed up on a rub route. Might have been Kenny Moore and Quincy Wilson, or Nate Harrison and Quincy Wilson, and you know, Seattle hit a chunk on a third down, and then Kenny Moore, I thought, had pretty good coverage on a third down route down the sideline and just couldn't finish that play. I just feel like with this passing coverage and what you're doing to that back end, I'm really curious to see if playmaking is going to be there. You know, you hear all this, you know, this is great, playing more zone coverage and eyes are on the quarterback and this and that. To me, I just see the zones just gaping right now. Mm-hmm. And, you know, whether it was Seattle or Indy, you know, guys are just settling into those zones and it's being pretty easy pitch and catch. You know, when you watch Andrew Luck at camp, he completes 20 balls in a night, 14 or 15 of them are pretty high percentage throws that right. It's almost like he's doing routes versus air.
Right.
So I think that is kind of my concern. It's okay, are these corners going to be able to, you know, are allowed to be really aggressive? I heard Kenny Moore use like this defense has taught me to be passive aggressive.
Mm-hmm.
I don't love that phrase when you're describing a secondary. So
right.
I still need to see more out of the corner position and I guess, you know, out of just that pass defense in general, because it's twofold right now. You don't have an elite pass rush and you don't have elite corner play.
Right.
How are you going to make up for that in the pass defense game? I think that's going to be difficult. From a run defense standpoint, I'm not, you know, I know Autry's given up a lot in terms of weight, or at least more than you typically would have, but I don't think they're going to be too leaky in those areas. I didn't think they did a great job setting the edge with Russell Wilson, but, you know, a lot of teams can say that. But, yeah, I would say my main concern right now is just, again, the two biggest areas. Do you have lockdown corners and do you have playmakers there? I don't think so. And then with the front, you know, can you get home? Because the one time you got home against Seattle in that first half, it was just that slow-moving stunt against Seattle's backup offensive line.
Right, absolutely. And so this kind of leads me into our next bit of topics here, kind of a two-part and even a three-part thing here. Do the Colts need more additions? And, you know, we've had this conversation, you know, well, and I say we as in Colts fans and people who are covering the team, we've all had this conversation of do they need to bring in somebody else? And we'll just start for an example at corner. Ballard, people, I still think that when people discuss Ballard's philosophy, I still think that they are kind of misinforming themselves about it when they refer to it, because we haven't gotten enough of a sample size to really see what Ballard's philosophy. We know what he says he's going to do. We know that he does what he says he's going to do. Those are two really important things, in my opinion, from a GM. But people are saying that he's not going after the big-ticket free agents, and that's not what he says. He said he's not going to spend the top-tier money on basically middle-tier talent. So with that, does he see Breland, maybe another guy at corner, as the mid-tier talent that's wanting the top-tier money? And, you know, when we hear people talk about Khalil Mack and some other trades and some other possibilities for this team, what is your take on that in general? Is this just kind of the group they're going to ride with? They have basically said that, and not in so many terms, but, you know, sometimes that isn't always what ends up happening. I think that they could probably use another guy at corner to not only increase the competition, but raise the level of talent, which is also something that Ballard says he wants to do. So some of those philosophies, some of those edges of philosophy have to meet at some point for this team, don't they?
Yeah. Definitely, and I do think they could use an upgrade at the corner position. And right now, I don't see it happening outside of kind of the end of roster cuts. And, you know, then you find Rashawn Melvin, Pierre Desir, Kenny Moore, you know, three guys that the Colts all found after the preseason cutdown. I think that's the route this team's going to go. I think what they claimed five last year, I want to say, that number wouldn't shock me again. If it's a corner, if it's a linebacker, if it's a you know, wide out or running back. I mean, it could, you know, there could be several positions I could see added after September 1st. But, you know, in terms of corner, I do think there was a bit of negligence in the offseason in how you handled that position group. Mm-hmm. I understand Chris Ballard and his philosophy, and I respect how willing he is and candid he is to explain it and adhere to it. Because you don't get a lot of gray area with him. Like, right. You know, if he's moving on from Jonathan Hankins, he thinks he's not a scheme fit. Like, right. If he's moving on from Melvin, he's not a scheme. Like, you know, it's pretty clear why he does things. And, you know, he before the draft started, he, you know, preached all along. You know, it's about the trenches and whatnot. And, boom, here comes two guards in the first 40 picks and two defensive linemen right after that. But having said that, that doesn't mean I totally agree with it, because when you have as much money as the Colts have and had back in March, I still think there was an opportunity to upgrade some positions while not totally tying your hands moving forward
right. From
a cap standpoint. And I guess the fear that Chris Ballard has is if I'm giving – you know, whatever, $10 million a year to a mid-level player, what message am I sending to the rest of the locker room?
Mm-hmm.
And I understand that. But to a level, free agency is about overpaying.
Right.
Like, if you aren't willing to overpay to some degree, this is what you're going to get. You're going to get an Austin Howard that you might have to cut. Like, you're going to have these swings and misses to where you know, maybe an Autry is a guy that you're finding as an ascending player.
Mm-hmm.
But just some of these other moves, I thought when you look at receiver and corner especially, those are the two position groups I kept on coming back to, that I thought when you enter free agency, if you re-sign Melvin, you kind of took care of corner for the offseason. Well, instead you re-sign Pierre Desir. So then I'm thinking, okay, you go into the draft, you've got 11 picks. I don't care if I'm have the Legion of Boom of 4 years ago. I'm still drafting a corner in one of my 11 picks.
Right.
Like, that's just how today's NFL is. I think you have to draft a corner in every draft. And not doing that, and then obviously it doesn't look like any of these undrafted guys are a serious threat to make the 53-man roster. It just seems like corner has been a little bit of a, hey, in this new scheme, we'll kind of get by with that.
Right.
And, I mean, a lot of your eggs are in the basket of Kenny Moore. He might be the most important corner on this roster right now.
Mm-hmm.
And some people might laugh at that, but he's maybe had the most consistent starting role in camp when you factor in nickel reps as well.
Yeah.
I mean, he's a guy that is playing outside, playing inside. Frank Wright gushes about him. Chris Ballard, we know, loves him as well. And, you know, that's where I respect Chris Ballard and his philosophy of, look, I drafted Quincy Wilson in the second round, but, hey, Kenny Moore is better than him, or at least in the Colts, you know, staff's eyes. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Kenny Moore's got more starting runs than Quincy Wilson has at Grant Park. So, you know, Breland, it's just hard to get a great grasp on what the medicals look like because clearly he's not finding a home anywhere else.
Right.
And maybe he's holding out for an X amount of dollar figure. But I just think there's a level where you can find that fine balance of improving your roster and at the same time not just killing yourself from a cap room standpoint. Mm-hmm. And I think the Colts are in that window right now to where you've got plenty of money to spend. You know, what's wrong with kind of a one-year prove-it deal or whatever? And again, Breland might not be wanting that. But other guys that you could have gone after at receiver and at corner to where all of a sudden, if you have an injury to T.Y. Hilton or you have an injury to Kenny Moore, as crazy as that sounds, I mean, you are now scrambling a bit, certainly a wideout and even a corner to find some quality players.
Mm-hmm. And Ballard and Frank both said actually recently, I think they were talking to Pat McAfee, where they were basically talking about everything's about the locker room. You know, you bring those guys in, you've got to make sure that they're a fit or that they have the – in basic, I take that back. He said that you want the locker room basically established and you want to be
able to – absorb.
Yeah, and I thought that was a really interesting word to describe what he meant, but it really kind of rings true. You do, but I also think that if you get faced with somebody that's got that talent and could be one of the top leaders on the team – then I think you make that decision to go out and spend some ducats on somebody that can really give you a large return. If that's if that's not Breland, I don't doubt that. I don't know that about him one way or the other. But you know, when you look at the higher echelon, I guess, of guys, man, they're I have to believe if I had the pockets that the Colts do right now, I think that I would be definitely on the phone with Oakland at some point because that's a guy that you can't miss on, in my opinion. He's already proved what he can
do. I'd be all in on the Mac train.
And the thing is, the Raiders can't pay him.
Interview.
The Raiders can't pay him right now, and that's the fun thing about it.
Right.
It kind of leaves this thing just open. It's like there's no way they can give him anything that he wants right now. But that doesn't mean it's going to happen for us. That's for sure.
Yeah. And I mean, trades are so scarce in the NFL, and I feel like they would do everything to make sure he was not in this conference.
Right.
But yeah, I listened to the same interview, you know, you did with Reich and Ballard. I think the quote that they used was, you want that player to absorb into your locker room.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt like they were indirectly talking about Dez Bryant.
I did too.
Of like, the culture is not there for him to absorb into it.
Mm-hmm.
And I totally get that. And that's why I'm very anti a Dez Bryant sort of move for this team. But, and I'll go back to another NBA sort of comparison and covering the Pacers. The Pacers of chemistry and culture clearly were vital, vital parts of them winning, you know, 48 games this year and exceeding expectations and all of that. But chemistry and culture is not going to let you hoist the Larry O'Brien trophy in mid-June. Like, you need some alphas eventually to get over that hump. And I don't think the Colts are at a point right now just to be like, all right, we need alphas, and if they're divas too, come on down. I get that, but I still think there could have been money spent in a way to where, all right, maybe we are overpaying for – you know, this sort of corner. I'm trying to rack my brain on some of the corners that were out there on the open market during the offseason, or this sort of wide out to where, all right, we're taking a little bit of a risk on you, but we think there's still some potential there, and you aren't the Dez Bryant sort of diva. Like, not everybody is a bad locker room guy.
Right.
Like, not every guy that gets overpaid for agency is a bad locker room fit.
Right.
So that's where I just think wide out and corner. And especially when you look at corner in that, you know, you have these young players and Wilson and Hairston and Moore, you know, I guess they're to the point right now where we really need to see what we have there,
mm-hmm.
Which I get it, but it's just a scary slope because if you don't like what you have and you don't find out about that until six or eight games in the season, you could be well behind the eight ball at that point.
Yeah, and you know, the more we talk about it, I feel like we're eventually going to get to that point, you know, in right at the 53 cutdown, and Ballard's going to knock a couple guys, you know, that the Colts could really use, and he's going to bring them in, and we're all going to be like, we were all like worried that Ballard wasn't going to be able to improve this cornerback room. And I mean, there are going to be guys who get cut that should be starting somewhere in the NFL and would be legitimate starters on the Colts right now. And it makes you really wonder if that is something that we need to have a little bit of foresight about. You know, we talk about it, but we don't really accept it because that's not who's in front of us right now on the practice field. And so that's something that we kind of want to look forward to. And it's one of the things that I'm most looking forward to be quite honest with you, especially this year, because last year, you know, he brings those guys in off waivers that he thinks are going to bring in more competition, bring the level up at certain positions, even if it's just a little bit. But, you know, this year's cut down, there's a couple of positions right now that could desperately use, you know, a 28-year-old veteran who's still got a good couple of years in his tank, or at least a solid year that the Colts could probably use right now. So I think that's one of the most intriguing parts of the beginning of the 2018 season for the Colts is what happens at cut downs.
Yeah, I mean, it kind of goes back to what I was saying earlier about, mm-hmm. you know, what, five guys?
Right.
They claimed last year. They've had great success. I mean, Jack Doyle,
right,
was a cut down guy off the Titans. So I mean, they have had proven success there in multiple regimes. So I think that when I look at the positions right now, and you know, the Colts are about to play three games in 10 or 11 days. I don't know when I'll be able to get to another 53-man roster projection. But you know, running back, receiver, linebacker, and corner are probably the four most popular positions that immediately come to mind. And inevitably, you're going to have just darn good football players, you know, maybe a defensive tackle, you know, you didn't think would be out there. You might not have that as your most pressing position of need, but you just can't say no to a guy.
Right.
And obviously, the Colts are going to have a very higher waiver, you know, waiver claim, you know, coming off a 4-12 season. So, to me, I would set the over-under at about 3.5, maybe 4.5
yeah.
in terms of roster claims. And, you know, A.Q. Shipley was a guy you claimed, and he started the first four games of the season 1 year for you.
Yep.
So I think that's very possible to see that happen again.
And he actually deserved, in my opinion, I'm sure that you'll agree, he deserved to actually start more than that. They pulled him way
Correct.
Too quick. That was
Correct.
Not a fun time, but not
Correct.
What, so let's talk about a couple of the guys that, you know, have been getting a little bit of the bad news, I think, as of late. And I think that you had one of the Basham for first and foremost as one of your thumbs down more or less through camp. But let's talk about another guy real quick before we get to Basham. What about Ryan Dallaire? He had a couple of real impressive practices. What did he look like yesterday? Did he continue to ascend in both the onlookers and the coaches' eyes, do you think?
Yeah, I would say maybe a little bit of a quieter day for him just because he had set the bar pretty darn high for a guy that just came off the street. And, you know, what he did with the tipped it to himself, INT, and then, you know, some nice pressure off the edge as well. And, you know, Dallaire's not your typical camp body that you sign right now. This is a guy that's, you know, played in the league. And I know a lot of people were high on him when he came out of town a couple of years ago. So, defensive end, I don't think is the easiest spot to crack the 53-man roster, just because, you know, you've got Sheard, got Simon. I mean, it looks like almost Hunt is probably playing more end than he is tackle. You have, you know, Ture, you know, Basham. I don't think you're going to cut him. So, you know, it's just kind of a hard group to maybe squeeze yourself into. But Dallaire is definitely a name that, you know, I think will be interesting to watch in some game reps. And if he does it a couple times, you know, these next couple preseason games, is then, you know, you're going to have a tough decision to make at a position that I don't know if you feel like you have great, great talent, but you have depth there unlike a lot of other spots on the defensive side of the ball.
And that was kind of the thing I wanted to lead into is there any chance at all that Basham doesn't make this 53?
I can't see it. Again, I'd have to probably crunch numbers a little bit more, but I mean, does a guy really go from pretty much, I mean, he started, I think we got to watch them six times in the spring. He was the starter every single day and probably every single first team rep.
Mm-hmm.
And that was back when John Simon was running with the third team on the adjacent practice field.
Right.
So I don't think so. I mean, obviously Chris Ballard is, you know, has some ties to him, you know, I guess a lot of ties to him, you know, when you take him in the third round,
right.
But, you know, he, you know, cut Zach Banner before, but I don't know. I would think with the scheme change, you would at least want to hold on to him for a year,
mm-hmm.
just because, you know, if injuries happen, you know, that would offer, you know, you a chance to see him in this, you know, natural system that he played in at Ohio. So yeah, I would say 20% chance. I just don't think you have enough talent there that would push him totally off the 53-man roster.
Yeah, I agree, but it's just something I just can't quit thinking about is I really want to see – I really want – not just because I liked him coming out of college, but I really want to see Basham become more of a technician. You know, he's got the power and strength. There's no question about that. And you see him off the edge just basically when he's – I'm out as a free rusher and they're taking the play to the other side of the formation. You see the burst, you see the explosion that they can see from him, but you just don't see any real results from what he's got. He doesn't have a good second pass rush move. It doesn't seem like he's much of a technician at all there. And you would think that a guy that young that under Robert Mathis's tutelage there, that would be one of the things that they're pressing the most on. Like, look, you've got to be able to have a second pass rush move. You can't just go bull rush every stinking time at these tackles. It's not going to work. He does not possess, in my opinion, good secondary moves, and he really needs that, and it drives me nuts. I want to see him ascend because he's got the physical talent and the youth that the Colts want and need, obviously, or Ballard wouldn't have taken that pick on him. We're just not seeing it.
No, it was something that Chris Bauer and I talked about down in the owners' meetings in late March. I just kind of asked him, all right, honest opinion about Basham, you know, because, Ballard called him out after the first month of last season.
Right.
Very vocal about how disappointed he was with Basham. And you know, Basham was not a guy that made a great first impression when he got in the building for rookie minicamp last May and, you know, couldn't really make it through, I think, the early practices with conditioning issues and stuff like that. And, you know, Ballard mentioned that you need counter moves to survive against NFL tackles because A, NFL teams have two good tackles, and B, they have offensive linemen know full well they can eliminate, you know, from a scouting standpoint, they're going to eliminate exactly what you do best, and they're going to force you to counter.
Mm-hmm.
And the MAC level is a nice level of college football, but you can sometimes get by just on pure athleticism and not needing to have a great counter move that is exceptional in terms of technique. And I think Basham just had to learn that. And it's something I think later in the year the Colts were pleased with, that he was starting to, you know, flash a little bit more. And it just hasn't really translated. I mean, he quickly fell out of those starting reps.
Mm-hmm.
At Grand Park, and you know, again, I went back and watched the Seattle game. I noticed kind of one burst off the edge, but then I noticed him, you know, missing a tackle a couple yards down the field on the run play. And I mean, he should be getting chances. There's been injuries at the end spot. You know, Ture's missed probably 2 weeks now, and
right.
Chris McCain has been in and out for a variety of reasons, and even John Simon missed a couple of days. And yet, you know, you might even put Anthony Johnson above Terrell Basham on the depth chart right now. So I know it doesn't sound great for him in terms of, you know, like, oh my gosh, why the hell should you even keep him? But I just think a third round pick, first year in the system, getting back to his college system, I just don't know if anyone has done enough around him that's like, oh my gosh, how in the world could you cut him and keep Basham? I don't think any end has done that in my mind just yet.
Right, I agree. And not only that, I mean, I think that you want to keep Basham to see what you've got. You know, Bauer has been harping on you want to, you know, build your own. And that's something I think that he's just simply going to say, we're going to see what this guy can give us for a year. And if he doesn't do anything, maybe at midseason, maybe, you know, maybe something happens. But I, at that point, you're kind of wasting, you know, wasting your time trying to let go of a guy midseason. So I'm more hopeful for Basham to actually prove something. And like you said, you know, last year, I think a lot of the people, when they heard him talking about Basham, thought that that was directed at Quincy Wilson about him coming.
Yeah, no.
And I think people have, do you recall that being the issue with Wilson at all at any point? Because I didn't. Maybe, I mean, I've heard a lot of people talk about it, but not a lot of people around the team. I've always heard what you're talking about now, with that Basham came in, you know, not in great condition, wasn't in shape. And I think that a lot of people just attributed that to Wilson, because I don't know if he actually said Basham's name, but it was clear to me who he was talking about.
Yeah, it was definitely Basham that he specifically mentioned. I remember it after the Seattle game. He went on that Monday night radio show and was, again, abundantly clear on who he was talking about. And I think over time it did kind of come out a little bit more that, you know, Wilson himself wasn't in the greatest shape, you know, coming out. And so both of those guys, I think, kind of fell into similar traps. And, you know, it seemed like Basham, at least from a health and conditioning standpoint, you know, he was on the field a lot during the spring. Like I said, he was starting it every day we were out there, whereas, you know, Quincy was a little bit more banged up.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, we don't have a great, great understanding on, you know, why Wilson was such a mystery scratch for so many games. And to me, he seems like a guy that just, when the lights turn on, he plays better than he does in practice. And I know a coach hates that. I know a staff hates that. But at the end of the day, I just feel like his game reps. I mean, I thought last year he played pretty good football.
Mm-hmm.
Or where that bar was kind of set at the corner position. So, I would like to see Wilson get a little bit more run here in these next couple of games, just to see, okay, you know, do we see any more playmaking out of the corners? And specifically with Wilson, is this just a guy that just plays well in the games and, you know, for some reason is inconsistent during practice?
Right. Yeah. I'd like to see him be more consistent as well. And, you know, but it's hard to put that on. Like you said, the staff hates it, but man, if he does come to play every Sunday though, man, that's so hard to, you know what I mean?
Right.
It almost brings you back to Allen Iverson's. We're talking about practice. You know what I mean? Almost to an extent. But let's finish this up, Kevin. I appreciate you coming on. A couple more topics real quick. We can kind of squeeze these through. But I wanted to talk about TJ Green. Is there another guy on this roster, in your opinion, at safety that can take him out of the 53? I mean, is Ronald Martin doing anything for you? Or what do you think about Cooper possibly? Is Cooper he's getting a lot of gunning reps. At least he was. I don't know about in the past few days. But is any of these guys being able to supplant TJ Green for this coaching staff or Chris Bauer, do you think?
I think Green's going to make it. But I do kind of like Martin. And I thought he kind of flashed a little bit in the preseason game as well. I thought George Odom had a nice start to training camp. But I think Cooper is kind of maybe – you know, been the new George Odom, if you will, lately. So I look at safety right now, I think you definitely keep four. You might keep five just out of an injury insurance / special teams. And I just don't think two people would supplant TJ Green.
Mm-hmm.
I think Farley, Hooker, and Gethers are locks. I still think Green will be on it just because if he can run – I mean, you know, special teams you would think would be a role for him, although he's never been a great, great special teams player by any means, and has certainly made a couple boneheaded penalties on that unit like he's done on defense as well. But for now, I don't see Green being cut. Antonio Morrison even, I feel like, has been running with first-team special teams units. But when I start crunching numbers at linebacker, I'm like, he's not even a top-five linebacker in my mind. It's Leonard, it's Good, it's Walker when healthy, it's Sky Moore, it's Tyrell Adams, and Zaire Franklin is a name that I think has climbed into at least I think him and Sky Moore have honestly probably split reps here over the past couple of days at that Mike position without Anthony Walker. So for now, I think TJ Green makes it, unless, you know, we do see more from a guy like Ronald Moore, Chris Cooper, or George Odom.
Yeah, I've liked what I've seen thus far, at least from Zaire Franklin. I've got him making the roster, whether he does or not. I don't know, obviously, but I've enjoyed watching him. He brings a little more physical presence to that Mike role that you would think that, and they've used him that way. They've used him on the base in their base sets. It's not a huge role at, you know, in the base when you're running 70% sub packages, but still, I think he's one of those guys that they should probably hang on to. I think he's going to at minimum be an impactful guy, special teams, but I also think he's a good linebacker so far. So. Let's kind of wrap this up with another guy who's made the right kind of headlines is Jordan Wilkins. We loved him since seeing him pretty much as soon as the pads came on there at practice. He impressed late in the game, obviously, in the snaps that he did get in Seattle. This guy just continues to impress people and show what he can do, and that show he's not as much of a finesse guy as we've kind of all pegged him to be. I think that Wilkins may be just the guy that really takes over in this running back room.
Yeah, he's been a surprise here at camp. And, you know, I just figured before the Turbin news, I just didn't think Jordan Wilkins would play that much. You know, it's hard to kind of incorporate four running backs into a weekly game plan. But, you know, the more I thought about it after the Turbin news, I, you know, started, you know, re-diving back into Wilkins, and I was like, man, 7 yards per carry against SEC opponents? Like, that's nothing to sneeze at.
Right.
And that run he had to end the game the other night, I mean, Frank Wright gushed about it, and I just went back and watched it a couple hours ago. I mean, he had no business getting that first down. And, I mean, that looked like a JV offensive operation there in the fourth quarter with snaps going overhead and this and that, and it was a disaster. And Wilkins just put his head down, like you said, got some tough yards. And I thought Nick Sirianni, the new offensive coordinator, had some funny comments about Wilkins, like, we aren't really sure what he does great, but he just gets it done. Yeah. You know, it's not like he's going to wow you with one physical attribute like a Hines or a Mack, or, you know, be some crazy power back, but the guy gets it done, and I think he's the closest thing you have to a three-down back outside of Marlon Mack. And, you know, I think he's even shown some flashes early on that maybe you would think he could be a consistent three-down guy as well. So Jordan Wilkins has improved his stock, I would say, more so than any other rookie here at camp. And if you're going to play the Bengals and Marlon Mack is healthy, I'd probably use Mack as that first feature back, Hines in that gadget role, and I'd let Wilkins get a full series of work in to spell Mack here or there.
Yeah, I would too.
I would have that much trust in him from day one, and Christine Michael would probably be the odd man out. But yeah, I think Jordan Wilkins is has shown enough that he should earn I think some nice playing time, and I thought it was odd he didn't play till the fourth quarter on Thursday night. But now with all the injuries at running back, he's going to get in a lot earlier come Monday.
Yeah, I agree. I think that we've all kind of seen from him that he's got the one thing that I was really pleasantly surprised about, and it wasn't anything massive, but you see him have to kick out on a couple of those runs where he just doesn't find a hole. And he's such a patient guy. You have to assume if he kicks out, there's nothing there. And he kicks out and he's still able to get 3 or 4 yards getting out to the perimeter of the defense. And that, I think, is going to possibly improve when they continue to work with the footwork. Rathman is an excellent running backs coach. I think that a lot of the simple things there, like the quick first step and the being able to really generate some power and some speed getting to the perimeter, is something that's going to come a little bit with him in time. Right now, and this is such a weird comparison because the speed's not the same, but I see a lot of the final year of Donald Brown in Indianapolis in with Jordan Wilkins, and just the way he is able to get through the line, and you see enough speed that he can carry for another 25 yards before he gets tackled. He just doesn't have that explosion speed like Mack and maybe Hines He's just one of those guys I think is just going to continue to get better throughout the season. We're just going to be really, really excited just to have him on the team because I think he really brings a diverse skill set in spite of not being the gadget guy who Hines is and in spite of not being the real speed guy in Marlon Mack. But I think that he's shown that he's able to go between the tackles, but he's also shown that he's got enough speed to get some positive yardage when he does decide to go outside. And I think that that's a real important trait for a guy like this to have. You've kind of got like a reverse Marlon Mack there, not including the speed, where last year you saw a lot of Marlon Mack wanting to hit outside as much as possible and almost preferring that, whereas now you've got a guy who wants to hit it inside, but he has the ability to get outside too. And I think those two as a 1-2 punch ultimately really would bring a lot of success for this Colts running back group, to be quite honest.
Definitely. Yeah. I think his ability to complement Mack from a skill set standpoint is something that I would think Frank Reich really likes. And I think the Colts feel comfortable, you know, that they've talked about it. You got to have backs you feel comfortable playing on three downs because when they do want to go up tempo, you got to be able to trust them.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Wilkins has earned that.
Yep.
And you know, that third and one live period a couple nights ago, it was Wilkins in there, you know, getting that starting nod and fighting for some extra yards. And, you know, I know 6'1", 217 screams in between the tackles and it screams tough. And that was maybe a little bit of a knock on him coming out, like he doesn't play to that size. But so far, so good out of Jordan Wilkins. And job well done for a guy that, you know, has made the most, I think, out of the Turbine news. And, you know, if he goes out there and shows something the first, you know, month of the season, I think he's going to be hard to keep off the field even when Turbine comes back.
Yeah, surprisingly slippery, too, for such a big dude, too, I think.
Definitely.
In between them tackles. So I love seeing that. Kevin,
yeah.
Man, I had a blast having you on tonight. Thank you for joining the show, dude. It's been a lot of fun.
Always enjoy it, Matt. Anytime.
Absolutely. Thank you guys all for listening. Make sure you guys are following Kevin on Twitter. Make sure you guys are following his work at 1070 The Fan. Always great stuff from him. Make sure you guys are getting to Stampede Blue for all your Indianapolis news and analysis. Thank you guys for joining us again. We'll talk to you next time right here on the Colts Cast. Stampede Blue.